Hello there, and welcome to the Crypto Frontier. I'm Jonathan Miller, Managing Director of Kraken Australia, and here on the Crypto Frontier, we will hear from the industry's best and brightest about the latest news in crypto and blockchain from Australia and around the world. Whether you haven't yet bought your first Bitcoin or want to better understand the latest DeFi token or development in blockchain, this show will go behind the scenes with founders, experts, and industry professionals to explore the technology that powers the future of finance. Please note that this podcast does not constitute financial product advice. You should consider obtaining independent advice from a financial advisor before making any financial decisions. I hope you enjoy the show. Hi, folks. In this episode, I speak with Robbie from Immutable, the team behind Gods Unchained, an NFT-based game, and Immutable X, a scaling layer for NFTs on Ethereum. Robbie shares some insight into the reasons that NFT games are growing so quickly, why he thinks that the future of gaming will be so potentially disruptive, the challenges these games face, and how Immutable X can help solve some of these problems. I hope you enjoy the show.
Well, Robbie, thanks so much for joining me today. This is a really exciting conversation. I'd love you to tell me a bit about your background and how you came to crypto.
Of course. Thanks, Jonathan. So my background is a self-taught software engineer and then formally studied comp sci and law at university, which was definitely a misspent couple of years. And I'll go through the long story, which is I started up by founding various startups. It was something I was just extremely passionate about with my brother. And one of the first things we built actually were, we were massive gamers. I think I have probably 3,000 hours in League of Legends, a couple of thousand hours in RuneScape. So definitely a poorly spent youth. But we actually built one of our first products, a betting platform or a self-wagering platform for League of Legends, where you could bet on your own games. And shortly after, we decided to build a machine learning platform that was a Shopify competitor, which would automatically A/B optimize your store based on pricing and copy and kind of give you the best results. And as part of that, we decided to build a piece of content on that platform, which was actually a hoverboard company, right during the hoverboard craze, if you remember it, way back in 2015.
That old craze, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And this built on the platform actually ended up becoming Australia's largest hoverboard company. So we had a bit of a crash course in marketing and logistics, and it all ended when the US government basically shut down shipping or delayed it by 12 weeks on every hoverboard because the batteries were exploding. And we got a massive amount of chargebacks. I think, you know, an order that was $110,000, which is more money than we'd seen in our lives, got cancelled. And I remember vowing to my brother that we would never do another hardware startup again. And also not compete with Shopify, to be quite frank. I think it was 10 years too late on the product side. And after that, we did a few things, but we got exposed to Bitcoin pretty early on in 2014. And we thought it was cool. I wasn't obsessed. I didn't think it was amazing. And then Ethereum in 2015, I basically fell in love with. And there are a couple of things that really sold me. I remember reading on their vision of a decentralized Uber on day one. And obviously, we've seen more internet native decentralized organizations take off faster than a big conglomerate like Uber. But I thought that it was such a phenomenal vision of how you could solve effectively both like monopoly power and also collective aggregate problems and network effects in a way that was previously completely impossible, which I found fascinating. And then the other thing was just playing with this little toy dApp back in the day called Etherroll, which I think is now gone. And I remember using this dApp and I thought, and for the viewers or the listeners who don't know what it is, it's basically you roll a die from 1 to 100 and you can pick the number it will go above and then it will give you some probabilistic reward based on that. So it's like a gambling contract. And I thought, this is absolutely phenomenal that in 50 lines of code, you can render obsolete huge billion-dollar government expenditures on enforcing compliant payouts and probabilities and transparent rewards from casinos, all the while completely disintermediating the middleman and being able to completely dowify the whole thing. And I said, well, if this can be done in 50 lines of code, this is clearly going to take over the world. Like all forms of finance is going to be run by some variation of this thing. But the problem was we weren't too sure what to build. We built some trading bots for a while. We built bots that would scrape faucets back when you could click a button and, you know, get a tenth of a or a hundredth of a Bitcoin just by clicking at a button twice a day. and which is insane, right? And we then basically stumbled across CryptoPunks in 2017, and we thought that this would be the thing that would take off. This was going to.
You were not right.
Exactly. Well, we didn't buy any back then, and my one shame is I never bought any CryptoPunks. Which is the story of everyone, right? But the key thing was we saw like, hey, NFTs are incredibly powerful. They're going to completely change the way that you own items inside games. And you know, having spent so much time trading, like my favorite thing about RuneScape. Was the economy. My favorite thing about Neopets, quite frankly, was the economy, the ability to have these digital goods. And I saw people trading party hats for thousands of dollars, and I bought items off my friends at school. So like the concept of a digital native object you'd pay for was quite familiar to me. Mm-hmm. And so we built Etherbots, which was the first ever multiplayer blockchain game. So literally you had robots battling on Ethereum completely on chain. So playing a round of it right now, which can never be taken down because it's on Ethereum, would cost you about $6,000. Because of the gas fees since then. I think we kind of encountered the scaling issues pretty early on. And then look, from there, we raised from Coinbase, blah, 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 to here. That was kind of the origin story of getting into crypto.
No, that's a good story. I mean, you know, I had a similar kind of experience, but more Bitcoin focused. And then I remember my experience with CryptoKitties. And again, the same kind of scaling issue. And I guess that kind of brings us to the nub of, you know, what you guys are building at the moment, right? And you know, I guess maybe it's even worth kind of starting off with this kind of argument, which is, you know, why can't you just use another blockchain, right? Playing devil's advocate here, because I've had a conversation with, you know, the guys from CryptoKitties built their own. Like they decided, nah, sorry, Ethereum's not going to work for us. So they went and built Flow. But yeah, so tell me about your approach to solving this same problem.
Yeah. So every step along the way, we were encountering and right at the frontier of Ethereum scaling. I remember Gods Unchained is not designed to be this game where you trade items for $10,000. It's this hugely high volume mainstream game where we want people to trade items for, you know, as much as 50 cents to, you know, expensive items too. But the point is we created more NFTs with Gods Unchained than the rest of Ethereum games combined. I think it was something like 20 million or something really silly. Mm-hmm. And that's growing day by day because it kind of increases in this play and earn economy. And so we had to really solve these issues along the way. And we eventually realized that a scaling platform had to be built. And I think the core reason why, rather than building a different layer one blockchain, we built this is like, first a matter of timing. So at the time Dapper chose to build Flow, ZK rollup technology didn't exist. In fact, every scaling theory on top of Ethereum, which we had investigated, which was everything from, you know, state channels to other various cryptographic solutions, simply didn't work. Like Plasma didn't work, and most of that team is now, you know, funneled into different projects. But literally at the time we're about to make a decision, we started seeing ZK rollups working and in production too. So we thought, well, this is clearly the advantage, because if you can build on top of the open internet, you should. There's no reason you should compete with Ethereum. It has an almost insurmountable amount of network effects around developers, around capital, and these things are very, very sticky. But most importantly, the ethos is fundamentally decentralized. And I think people are now seeing the risks when you go with alternatives, whether it's, you know, BSC kind of really struggling to attain scale with the way that they designed their architecture, having just tweaked down decentralization levers in Ethereum in order to make up for scale, or whether it's things like Solana going down for 24 hours or Polygon having a $600 million hack on one of its bridges. So fundamentally, this stuff matters. It affects the price and security of the assets that you put on top of it. And so the way I think of it is like, it's the set of physics that you're deciding to build upon. And that will determine what other objects can you interact with and how secure is your stuff.
Mm, yeah, absolutely. Well, why don't we go down the stack right now and just talk about this choice? Because, you know, I've spoken to the Arbitrum team and I think, you know, what's really interesting here, and even those guys kind of acknowledge this, is that, you know, certain use cases have different needs. So tell me about the choices you guys have made, how you arrived at them, just briefly, you know, in terms of the roll-ups and the ZKs.
Yeah, of course. So I think let's take the industry very broadly. and look at what are all the alternatives you can have if you're trying to scale NFTs, which is what we're focused on. First off, you have alternative layer one blockchains, which you just mentioned a few of them. And they're fundamentally just competitors to Ethereum. And so really, it's case-by-case basis, but at the end of the day, what you're losing is the liquidity, the user base, the network effects of Ethereum, and also the security of Ethereum, because it's very, very difficult to have $500 billion in economic bandwidth, which is essentially, you know, the protocol value of Ethereum. The cost to attack Ethereum is ridiculously high compared to other networks, and it's very difficult to replicate that because that requires capital. Mm-hmm. Then the second thing I think is looking at sort of layer two scaling solutions. And there's also sidechains. And sidechains, I basically consider a layer one with a bridge to a blockchain like Ethereum. Mm-hmm. And they're branded as sidechains to, I suppose, feel more Ethereum compatible, which is fine. But ultimately, they don't really inherit the security of Ethereum. So it's kind of a decentralization theater to me. And then I suppose you have layer twos, which I'd split up into optimistic rollups and zero knowledge based rollups. And the key difference is their costs and the type of proofs involved. So optimistic rollups use what is called a fraud proof, which means that you batch lots of activity off chain into a form of compressed proof of that activity, and then you upload that proof to the chain. Both of those solutions work via that mechanism fundamentally. But a fraud proof works by saying, hey, I assume this is true. There is a large bounty if someone can prove it's not. And that has a few problems. The first is someone might not call out that bounty. And so you just have this incorrect truth being uploaded. And the second is you have to have a 1 week withdrawal period to allow those proofs or those challenges to the proofs to be generated. Otherwise, you can't confirm anything. And that's really bad for NFTs because for fungible tokens, you can generally have market makers provide liquidity instantly. So if you're waiting to have that withdrawal period, you can have a market maker provide you with liquidity on the other side. But with a non-fungible token, it's not as if I can loan you a one-of-a-kind NFT or even appraise the value. That's one of the fundamental NFT problems, right?
Yeah, yeah.
The other difference is cost. So optimistic rollups by design are just inherently much, much more expensive in terms of the data that they layer on chain. And so they're really problematic for NFTs because NFTs are very illiquid and very expensive to trade. So if you're looking at, say, a gaming use case where you want to mint millions of NFTs a day, which is easily the scale we're going to hit with major games coming on board, you need a solution that has a cost basis that is much, much smaller. The advantage of optimistic rollups, by the way, is that it's much easier to have EVM compatibility. So
yeah, you can just code, right?
Precisely.
Or port your code.
Precisely. And this is an advantage that is not intrinsic. It is just much easier to get to market with it faster. And it doesn't really matter to the NFT use case or to most of our customers. And so we decided to take the longer term bet on ZK rollups, which Vitalik sort of, you know, talks about as the long-term scaling solution for Ethereum. And in comparison, obviously, a zero-knowledge rollup uses a validity proof, which means that cryptographically, you cannot lie about the contents that have been submitted and that the judge contract on chain, when it's submitted and it passes, it ensures that essentially all the state changes embedded in that proof are completely correct. And it's also very, very cheap. So we allow people to create literally tens of millions of NFTs at zero cost to them. So if you're a game and you want to achieve that level of scale, we're able to provide that.
Well, that's really, really fascinating and brings me, I guess, to my next kind of line of inquiry, so to speak, which is, okay, let's talk about adoption here more generally, not necessarily of your protocol, which I think is just so fundamentally good. But more broadly, you know, the gaming industry, there's been a bit of, I don't know, argy-bargy perhaps about, you know, adoption of crypto and gaming. And, you know, that's a debate, right? But from your point of view, okay, why are you seeing games make use of NFTs? And what are the big drivers here?
Yeah, well, first off, we really had the Angry Birds moment of the crypto space, which is Axie Infinity's massive success. Mm-hmm. And that has been a lighthouse for everyone, and there are going to be many, many more to come. And obviously, the quality of Axie is low as a game, but it's high in terms of a valuable project. And you know, I'm not saying that to besmirch them. I think what they've done is pioneering, but everyone admits it's not like a AAA game, and that's not the point. But there will be, the entire space is going to be filled with AAA content very, very soon. And that massive arbitrage is kind of going to even out. So I think that's the first thing. The second thing is probably more of a top-down strategy, which is the biggest companies in the world are all looking defensively at what kind of strategy they need to have built around NFTs. And that's because they're all very scared of being on the wrong side of the change and not being ready to take advantage of it. So, you know, people have learned from the innovator's dilemma, and every large company now has a 30 to 50 person blockchain strategy company, literally, working on blockchain full time and figuring out how, if this thing truly starts to become mainstream, it's going to take off. But the segment that excites me the most is the mid-market segment. So game studios or games with valuations between, say, 50 mil and a bill that are going all in, because they see this as their time to take away the crowns of the biggest gaming studios in the world. And I think that's incredibly exciting. And in the same way that Zynga rose to the back of the new form of distribution that mobile and social gaming allowed it, we're going to see the same kinds of companies emerge in this space who generate playbooks and execute ruthlessly against the vast advantages in distribution, retention, customer acquisition cost, and lifetime value that NFTs are bringing to games.
Yeah, that's fascinating. And tell me then, from your perspective, why, and we don't have to talk about Axie, but more broadly, why do users like this?
It's easy. So first off, you own the thing. It's, if you could, you know, if you bought a house and you could never sell that house again, how much would you spend on it? Nowhere near the amount you'd spend today. You'd pay a decent amount for the utility, but ultimately, if it's not an asset, you're not going to spend $1 million. And so the key difference is you can now own the items inside of these games. And so that's just a fundamental value advantage. Like there's no downside there. The second thing, though, that I think is really cool is that you can actually start to generate really new incentives and economic models built off these games. And I think the success of Roblox and the success of companies like Manticore, basically anything which is approaching UGC and leveraging UGC in order to be successful is just showcasing how powerful this is. And, you know, even Invu, we launched recently, they have over 100 million objects inside that game or universe, and they're all player created. So the largest labor force in the world actually is like literally gamers doing it for free. And if you can create an economic incentive around that, if you can mean that the object that they create can be valued by a market, you have an incredibly powerful mechanism on your hand. That's what Roblox nailed when it discovered the sweet spot in terms of ability to quickly build experiences and games and the flexibility to actually, you know, innovate and allow true competition rather than having a platform that is too restrictive in terms of creativity. And so we're going to see, I think, a huge amount of value where players can now both earn money by playing a game, but also as a creator. And this is the broad disruption that NFTs have done, right? Which is, it is the greatest shift in economic value from aggregators or platforms to content creators in the history of the world. Because no longer do you have this ridiculous idea of the patronage model, which we used back in the 1700s to sponsor, you know, like lords and barons would sponsor a bard and have them play at their parties. And we still use this on Twitch today. Like Street Stream is a paid via people donating because they think they want to support the person, which is nuts. And so we have this incredible transfer of value from the content, which was typically the value accrued to the platforms, to now the creators themselves. And so I think the second thing is players are now in their own seat when it comes to economic value creation inside games.
Yeah, that's a huge shift, isn't it? Okay, well, let's just talk then about you guys again. Now that we've gone really broad, let's just come back to, you know, I guess where you guys are at in terms of your roadmap, what's coming, so anything you can share with us about, you know, the coming 6 and 12 months.
Yeah. First off is expect a huge ton of content on Immutable X. So the stat that I am really thrilled with is, so we tripled, say, Polygon's NFT volume for last month. But the thing I'm most excited about is the vast majority of that volume came from self-service customers. So customers just coming and building on Immutable X permissionlessly and creating their projects on top of us without even ever saying hi. And so we're going to be very aggressively doing a lot of, you know, business development and trying to work with large companies, but also just making our platform the best place to build if you just want to build without having to talk to anyone. So I guess that's number one. Number two, we expect a lot of product improvements coming out as always. And number three, I think, would be expect expansion into new verticals. So gaming and social media and art is kind of where NFT volume is concentrated right now. I think that volume is very much going to rotate into gaming, especially if we go into Mini Bear Run, which is not unlikely over the next year or two. I think that speculative-driven NFTs are going to fall away in favor of NFTs that have a real core utility for being traded. They're embedded inside a game. You need them to play or to use something, or they're core to your ownership of an avatar inside a universe, which a lot of people use. Objects with real defined value propositions are going to weather and drive volume throughout that market. So I'm excited about that.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I guess, One thing that a lot of people look at when they look at NFTs, they go, what the hell does this even mean? And it's great to hear the language starting to evolve here, you know, with people talking about crypto art and, you know, crypto gaming tokens and crypto avatars and things like that. So I think that's really important because it's not just one thing. You know, I've seen, you know, DeFi platforms use NFTs like, you know, Crucible and stuff like that. So yeah, that needs to evolve. And the word NFT, it's a massive playing field. So that's really exciting from you guys. Well, Robbie, thanks so much for your time today. I think it's been just absolutely kind of illuminating.
Of course, Jonathan.
And yeah, really, really pumped to see more people, you know, use your platform and I guess make the experience of using NFTs cheaper for everyone. So that's just a massive win.
Absolutely. No, thanks for having me.
Thanks everyone for joining me on this show and for tuning in. Make sure you subscribe and review on your podcast platform of choice, and we'll make sure we take you right to the edge of the crypto frontier. And remember, you can learn more about all things crypto by visiting kraken.com/learn. Until next time, I've been Jonathan Miller, and this has been the Crypto Frontier.